get all kinds of help. It's very important at a conference of this kind to introduce you to some patients who have taken advantage of all of the information that is available in the area of alternative healing, some of the things you're looking for, to at least talk to someone who's been through it, to hear their story, and to be able to ask them some questions and see if they can't be helpful to you. Betty Fowler, I'm starting at that end. Betty Fowler is was one of our native New Yorkers who is now living out in Seattle, and she came to us quite a number of years ago, which she'll tell you exactly when her diagnosis took place, with a skin cancer. And then the next person is Jeannie Glickman. Jeannie Glickman was actually responsible for the creation of this organization. Not especially alternative cancer therapies, but there was an indirect involvement. She started an organization of this kind, or at least a chapter of an organization of this kind, because of her own situation and her desire to help others. Actually, I think it's more than a desire. We feel an obligation to help others. And Daniel is our youngest recoveree, who has been very conscientious, made a commitment, and has stuck to it and is continuing to stick to his beliefs, and they're sound and solid. I don't know which one of you wants to deliver your story first. It's immaterial to me, but I think this audience is really anxious to hear you.
Okay. You have a microphone.
You could sit down
there,
Betty,
if you want to stay, unless you prefer this.
I prefer that.
Okay. Do you want a light? There's a way to get a light here.
No, I don't need a light.
Oh, I
okay. Thank you, Ruth. Their nod said, you know, you go first. And thank you all for being here, and thank you, FACT, for the opportunity to present my story. I would like to introduce you to my recovery from cancer with a tale, The Downfall of Richard III. I'm sure you've all remember this one. For want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of the shoe, a horse was lost. For want of the horse, a rider was lost. For want of the rider, a battle was lost. For want of the battle, a kingdom was lost. These five lines have a special significance to all battling cancer or who have loved ones battling cancer. Let me explain with a new tale. The Downfall of the Cancer Victim. For want of pure air, the body cannot breathe. For want of pure water, the body will stagnate. For want of whole foods, the body will sicken. For want of nutritional and structural support, the body will weaken. For want of detoxification, metabolic toxins will spread. In other words, for want of pure air, pure water, whole foods, nutritional support in the form of quality food and supplements, for want of proper structural balance and the retention of metabolic waste, the battle will be lost and the cancer victim will die. 15 years ago, 1971, I was diagnosed as having cancer. It was located on the left side of my lower lip and in the middle of my chin. The tumor, I was told, was a basal cell carcinoma, one of those skin cancers that are considered quite curable. 9 months later, after two operations and a third biopsy, I was told the cancer had spread. I was urged by my surgeon to see an oncologist. I was told by my surgeon that he suspected I now had either melanoma or sarcoma of the jaw. I was advised to undergo chemo surgery. I turned the procedure down and instead, at the beginning of 1972, through FACT and Ruth Sackman, began a non-toxic biological repair program, the Kelly Program. I struggled through 2 years and 4 months with a new dietary regime. Nutrient supplements, intense detoxification, organic foods. In 1974, I saw a specialist, a surgeon who removed what he called a myodox or mucus cyst from the site of the former cancerous tumor. There is a commercial on TV for a brokerage firm that best expresses my struggle. This spokesman tells the viewer, "We make money the old-fashioned way. We earn it." Yes, I got well the old-fashioned way. I earned it. I worked hard for wellness. Ladies and gentlemen, there's no magic bullet to getting over cancer. It takes hard work. But it's wonderful because the end of the road is a satisfaction in your ability to control your body. I will admit I got turned on to the Kelly program by way of fear. I followed mainline medicine from 1971 to 1972, and I turned to the Kelly program in 1972 as a last resort to staying alive. I knew I would die if I did not find another way because I had the examples in my own family. I had lost three uncles, two aunts, numerous cousins to cancer. All of us have had different cancers. Today, I can personally vouch for the Kelly program. It worked for me. It has worked for thousands of others. The Kelly program is no fairy tale. When I got on the Kelly program in 1972, I was able to grasp the importance of pure air, pure water, drinking large amounts of pure water to help clean out my kidneys, eating whole foods, taking wholesome supplements, getting adjustments from an osteopath or chiropractor, but I did not comprehend the importance of the process of eliminating metabolic toxins or waste from my body. Nor did I understand what would happen to me as I was disposing of the waste. I have been a metabolic technician since 1980 with the Kelly program and find that the process of detoxification is a difficult concept for my consulees to grasp. And from the few people I've talked to here, I see that that concept is still a difficult one to understand. I have been able to get them to get a better handle on the process when I tell them, look, it is important to clean your insides out as it is to take a bath, as it is to have clean clothes. Why do you find it so difficult to understand that you've got to keep up with your enemas, your gallbladder liver flushes, your colon purges, if that's the right thing for your metabolic type? And now, fortunately, we have the Kalema board. From Ruth Sackman, from Dr. Kelly, from reading books, and there's great books out there on fighting cancer, by attending these kind of meetings, there's no other organization like FACT, none. I began to get to understand, it began to sink in to me that my immense fatigue, I could not exercise, my inability to concentrate, my fading memory. You know, there were times I used to live in New York City where I had to walk down the street and repeat my name and address because I had that horrible feeling, I'm going to lose control. I will forget my name and forget my address. My depression, my pains were due to metabolic waste flowing through my body. The poisons of cancer are in the liver, the gallbladder, the kidneys, the lungs, the colon, the skin, in the bloodstream. They're all over the body when you have cancer. And there's only one way to eliminate the toxins of cancer. I repeat, detoxification. What is detoxification? Enemas, the use of a Kalema board or colonics, colon purges, gallbladder, liver flushes, the clean sweep, and eliminating the toxins of cancer takes time. It takes perseverance. It takes patience. And I repeat, it takes hard work. During my intense detoxification period from 1972 to 1974, and make no mistake about it, I still detoxify. I still eat. I still need to detoxify. I experience what health practitioners call healing crisis. I like the the term I would like to see it called painful reactions. Because when you first go through it, the first thought I had is, my God, my cancer is getting worse. I'm going to die. None of this is working. But I was fortunate. I had Ruth Sackman a call. Poor Ruth, I think I called Ruth every day for at least 2 years and 4 months. She was very patient, and she said, yes, you have feeling nauseous. Yes, you've lost your appetite. Yes, you have a migraine. Yes, you have a stomach ache. Yes, you have foul-smelling gas from the bowel. Yes, I know you have insomnia and can't sleep. Yes, I know you're lethargic or feel that way. You are fatigued. Yes, this flu-like thing you're going through, this vomiting, this passing of blood through the rectum are healing crises. Don't panic. I also had difficulty breathing. I had boil-like eruptions. My back itched tremendously. I had swelling of the lymph nodes in my neck and under my arms. I had fever. I had constant pain in my jaw. I had horrible earaches. I had attacks of neuritis. Sometimes as I was going through a healing crisis, the cancerous sore, a real big one on my lower lip and chin, would pop open and out would come foul pus. One time it hit my mirror. I tried to clean it off and it took off part of the mirror. Being a metabolic technician the past 6 years has reinforced the concept that we are not only as different as our fingerprints, but that toxicity experiences, healing crises, reactions differ from person to person. Even with those who have similar cancer diagnoses, I would like to give you two examples, counselees of mine with lung cancer. The first, a woman in her early 50s had a diagnosis of cancer of the uterus 15 years ago. She had had a hysterectomy. She went back to the doctor year after year and was told she was okay until about 19 months ago. Then she was told you have double lung cancer. She was scared and let the surgeon remove one lung. She was advised to have radiation on the remaining lung. She did some research and then decided not to undergo radiation. Instead, she decided to get on the Kelly program and came to me. Her healing crisis consisted of the following symptoms: swelling and pain in her head, swelling of the lymph nodes in her arms, many desires to commit suicide, crying spells. In January of this year, after being on the Kelly program for 14 months, she went to her doctor for x-rays of her remaining lung. He called her into his office and she thought, oh my gosh, she's gonna say I have cancer again. And he said, you know, your remaining lung is as clean as a whistle. Well, she replied, this proves that the Kelly program works. Guess what his reply was? No, he said, what has happened to you is a miracle. The second double lung cancer victim is a man in his 60s. He first came to me about a year ago. He did not get on the program after our first visit. I was told by a member of his family he thought the Kelly program was quackery, too expensive, and too difficult. He wanted a magic bullet. I was told he had decided to follow the recommendation of his oncologist and have radiation. He had the radiation, and shortly thereafter went back to the doctor before his checkup was due. The doctor examined him and said, we can't do anything more for you. Go home, get your affairs in order. Your condition is terminal. He came back to see me 4 months ago, a very frightened, ashen-looking man. He got on the Kelly program. His healing crisis or his healing reactions or symptoms were as follows: coughing up blood, difficulty breathing. What do I say to clients when they call me with a healing crisis? I simply tell them what I did. I cycled off my supplements and detoxified. I worked hard to clean out the toxic poisons in my body, in my bloodstream, my lymph glands, my glandular system, my cells, my colon. I took colonics. Now I use a Kalema board. I took enemas, purges, flushes. Of course, I drank only pure water. I still do. After each healing crisis, and there were many for me, I was able to go back on my nutritional support of quality supplements. Then and now, I eat only live, vital foods. I drink fresh juices such as carrot juice, what I call the ABC, apple beet and carrot juice, celery and carrot juice. I want to get back to this male client of mine. Last month, in May, he saw the doctor for a checkup. The doctor, I told, was shocked to see him and said, point blank, "You should be dead by now, but you're looking good. You're looking better than you when you were here last. What are you doing?" His family told him about, quote, Betty Fowler, her recovery from cancer, about the Kelly program. And they were surprised, but I wasn't, to learn that this doctor was not interested in investigating the Kelly program. His disinterest reminds me of another tale about the legendary figure Galileo. Galileo disputed the scientific teachings of the great Aristotle. Aristotle believed that objects of different weights fell through the air at different rates of speed. Remember that one? Aristotle had concluded that a 10-pound weight would fall to the ground 10 pounds faster than an object weighing only 1 pound. Galileo thought otherwise. Galileo demonstrated that Aristotle was wrong by dropping two cannonballs, one weighing 10 pounds, the other one exactly 1 pound. Both landed on the ground at the same time. Galileo, you know, made other discoveries, including the fact that the Earth, as well as all the planets, moved around the sun. The authorities were shocked. At the age of 70, Galileo was summoned before the Inquisition. The trial dragged on for 6 months. A broken man, half dead, Galileo signed a paper declaring that he rejected his former discoveries. Galileo agreed that the Earth was the center of the universe and that the Earth stood still. As they led him from the trial room, Galileo was heard to whisper, "Nevertheless, the Earth does move. And I whisper to all who refuse to look into the Kelly program and other non-toxic therapies, nevertheless, the Kelly program and non-toxic therapies do work." An excellent publication I've been trying to help sell because I have found it beneficial to my clients for understanding the fundamental laws of wellness, and every time I come to a FACT convention, I buy some, is the Prevention of the Diseases Peculiar to Civilization. It is only $2. I recommend you run out and buy it. If you have any questions afterwards, ask me. And now I would like to thank you for being such an attentive audience.
Thank you, Betty. And between the two of you, who's been chosen to go next?
Okay.
Do you want to stay there?
Yes.
All right. Jeannie Glickman.
Thank you, Ruth. I think better on my seat than on my feet.
Let's bring it close to you. You need it
close. Okay. Can you hear me? No. Can
yes.
you? This is how I talk to my husband. Can you hear me now? 1967, which is almost 20 years ago, I was living on Long Island in Hicksville, and I went to a local doctor, and I found out that I had cancer of the uterus. And I did what most everybody does. I said, well, if I have such a serious disease, I'm going to go to the biggest doctor, the best doctor. I'm going to go to a cancer specialist in a teaching hospital in New York City. I mean, don't we always look for the best? As an apprentice, the best is usually the worst. And so I went to Columbia Presbyterian. I went to the head oncologist there. And he said, yes, I had cancer of the uterus, and we have to do something right away. I think that the reason that they rush us when they think that we have cancer is because they're afraid we'll go to another doctor and give them the money. So I was rushed into the hospital. Well, first, before the surgery, we got to have radiation. I mean, we've got to use all the modalities that they have. That's called the technical chamber of horrors.
And I went to the hospital for 3 days. I had sort of what they call an operation. They put ingots in my uterus, about 22 ingots, with large steel wires sticking out of the vagina. You lay in bed, you can't move because you got these long wires sticking out, and you're full of radiation, all this 22 ingots of radiation, and you can't move. And when they feed you in the hospital, you're laying there flat, and they bring you your breakfast, and you have this tray, and they put your breakfast on top of you, on the tray. Now, you're laying flat. You don't know what's up there. You know, you take your scrambled egg and where is it? Whatever. Then when lunch came, they didn't want to clean up my room because those people didn't want to be exposed to all this radiation that I had in my body for 3 days. They took the lunch tray, they put it on top of the breakfast tray. When supper came, they take the supper tray, they put it on top of the lunch tray. So the only time my room ever got cleaned up and I was able to be fed decently was after work when my husband came to visit with me. It was a horror, really a horror. I have since read in a local medical journal that they don't use these ingots anymore because they said it doesn't work. Fine. Meanwhile, my body still has the residue of all that terrible radiation. Okay, 6 weeks later, they wait 6 weeks, I don't know why. After radiation, then they gave me a complete hysterectomy, took out everything. He was so proud of the fact that when I woke up, he says, "We even took out your appendix." He was so proud of himself. If you heard Dr. Roy today, he said that that's one of your immune system protections. Okay, and I had my tonsils out when I was 5, so I'm in good shape. But then after they took out everything which I'm suffering from even today, I went back for 6 weeks or 3 weeks, I don't remember, for a checkup, and he said, "You're healing fine." And I said to him, "I want you to tell me how I can prevent this from happening." He says, "It's easy. You come to me every 3 months, and we'll x-ray you, and we'll make sure you're all right." And I say, "Well, I want to avoid a tumor. I want to prevent a tumor. I don't want to go through this ever, ever again." And he said, "This is the way you prevent it. By more x-ray, and if there's a tumor, more radiation, more surgery." I said, "Thanks, but no thanks." I went to the library, and I took out all the books they had then on cancer. That's 19 years ago. All the books had information on orthodox therapy, which is the surgery, the radiation, and then the chemotherapy, the cutting, the burning, and the poisoning. They had no books, no information on alternate therapies. You people are very, very lucky. You have Ruth, you have the FACT organization, you have somebody to call, you have somebody to talk to, you have some place to go where you can find information about alternate therapies. I had none. I knew, just to backtrack a little bit, when the doctor said that I needed surgery, I didn't need the surgery. He needed the surgery. He needed the money. I knew it was wrong. I instinctively knew it was wrong. But you can't go from one thing to nothing. You have to go, if you know there's an alternative, then you have some place to go. But if the doctor says, "I'm going to save your life with the radiation and with the surgery," and your family believes him, you have no place else to go. You have nowhere else to turn. That's why you're so lucky that you have an organization like this, because at that time there was no organization. There was nobody you can call up on the phone and ask for advice. After a while, I was lucky enough to find a doctor who believed in vitamin supplements, and I started going to him. And I would go once a month, and he would give me injections of vitamins and minerals. He was marvelous. He's still on Long Island today. And then all of a sudden, you know how we're brainwashed. We say we have to go to the doctor for every year for a checkup and a check, right? And I figured, well, my year was up, and I really have to go to a doctor for a checkup and a check. So I asked this doctor that's just giving me vitamin injections where I could go for a doctor who would believe in natural therapies and wouldn't believe in cutting me up again. And he recommended, now I had no idea what he had in mind at the time. He recommended Dr. Max Wolf, and that was on Central Park West, and he's no longer living, so don't take notes. This is very interesting. He didn't undress you to find out how you were. He took a little blood, he took a little urine, he could tell with his eyes, with his fingers, with his sense of feeling, with his experience. This is an old-fashioned type doctor where he could look at you and he could tell whether you're sick or not. He did a very interesting thing. When I went to him, it was summer and I was wearing a silk dress and a silk slip underneath, heavy. And he just felt my stomach a little bit. And he said, "You had your appendix out, didn't you?" Now, I don't have a scar for the appendix, but he could feel it under my skin. This is a man who had fingers that were sensitive, like the old-fashioned doctors. Not that they depend on machinery. Anyway, so he gave me a treatment of pancreatic enzymes and cell therapy. And I want to tell you about cell therapy. It's a marvelous therapy, marvelous. In fact, our next speaker, I think, is going to speak on cell therapy. Cell therapy is when they take an unborn animal, and whatever you have wrong with you, if it's your heart, if your adrenal glands aren't working right, if it's your pancreas, they take the cells of this animal and they inject it in your behind. And those smart little cells, they go exactly where they're supposed to go. And they rejuvenate the organ that it's supposed to rejuvenate. If it's pancreatic cells, it goes to your pancreas. If it's heart cells, it goes to your heart. It's marvelous, marvelous therapy. Well, when he examined me, he said that my pancreas was not functioning, hardly at all. I read a book once that the reason that people get cancer is because if you eat too much sugar or if you're under terrible stress, it puts the stress on your pancreas, and your pancreas secretes certain enzymes. These enzymes are protein digestants. And if you're eating protein, your pancreas secretes these enzymes and digests the protein. If you're growing a tumor, your tumor is protein. And so this pancreas, the enzymes from the pancreas, also digest the tumor. Now, if your pancreas is not in good condition and you might have a tumor growing, and I believe that we all have cancer. We all have cancer. It's just that when our bodies are working in good condition, it dissolves it, it digests it, and then we don't know about it. But if we're under terrible, constant stress for a few months or a few years, the tumor will take over and the pancreas will stop working. So I needed pancreatic enzymes. He gave me the cell therapy of pancreas. And then I came back a week later for the results, and the results was he was able to test whether the pancreas was working or not, and it did come up a little. And so he gave me another shot of pancreatic enzymes, and it came up to just passing grade, you know, 65. But this is a wonderful therapy. The idea is that, I don't know if you ever heard of Paul Niehans. And he was in Switzerland, and he started this cell therapy. And most everybody that took this therapy at that time, I'm talking about 1939, you never heard of it, right? Because it's not legal in this country. But it's being done in Germany, it's being done in England, it's being done in Mexico. And he gave it to one of the popes or two of the popes. He gave it to Adenauer. He gave it to Bernard Baruch. And most of these people who had the cell therapy not only were rejuvenated facially, that they started to look younger and look better, they felt better, they all died like in their 90s. I've heard that the Kennedys go there very often for boosters. They go first for all the shots that they need, and then they go for boosters once a year or once in 2 years. It's a marvelous therapy. And if you want to ask me questions about it, be sure to stay here and listen to the speaker who's going to tell you more on cell therapy. Because I think that no matter what's wrong with you, arthritis, headaches, I do know from all the literature I read that it does help people who have Down syndrome children. And if you give the cell therapy to them as soon as they're born, that it does reverse the problem. I think that's all. Okay. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Jeannie. We're trying to cut the talks a little bit short so that we don't have to deprive you of an opportunity to ask and get questions answered, as we had to do with Dr. Yamayanis. But we thought what he was saying was so interesting, it was more important to let him go on. Our last speaker, and not our least speaker, Daniel Friedkin. I have to time him, although he was kind enough to help me time the other two people. So let's go, Daniel, and we'll have time for questions and answers.
Thank you. Thank you, Ruth. Thank you for letting me be here and speak. I'm sure you've all heard a whole lot of information, and I'm going to try to offer you just a little bit more in case you haven't gotten enough. First, let me identify myself to you. For those who are familiar, that before you consume something, read the label. Let me see if I can help you read the label that comes with me. I wear two hats. One hat is I'm a healthy cancer patient. I had to remind myself, the term is former cancer patient. It's 8 years ago, but I'm not comfortable with that, because if I don't lead a certain lifestyle, my health changes. I've seen that again and again. So I need to remind myself, I'm not like everybody else. Sometimes it's inconvenient, but most of the time it's very, very rewarding because of how good I feel when I feel good, and how far I've come. And because I'm a former cancer patient, there's a built-in bias, there's an enthusiasm. Please hear it, but don't buy anything I'm saying. If there's anything I'm willing to be responsible for, it's probably two things. One, if you want particular information on what you ought to do, please go to FACT. As wise as I may think I am right now, as much as I certainly think I know, if it were an issue for me again, if it were someone in my family, I would immediately turn to FACT. Please hear that. Whatever you think about what I'm going to say, I would turn to FACT to get the information. I would put my life not in my experience, but in their information, in their observation, and the fact of not only how long they've been out there, but the numbers of people that they've seen and followed, the experience that they have gained from the people who have followed through consistently and from the people who haven't followed through consistently. The other hat I wear, and let that be clear, is over the years I changed what I used to do for a living, and now I'm one of those out there alternative healthcare practitioners. I was offered an opportunity to talk about my work or display it, and for different reasons, I didn't care to now. I'm flattered by the compliment, and I want you to be aware I also have that vested interest. And that's the only other thing I would take responsibility for. Besides going to fact, the other thing I'd be willing to recommend to anybody in particular is in the middle of your anxiety, in the middle of your justified concerns, the willingness to try to be peaceful and calm, because we all have had a right to be concerned and anxious, but I can't emphasize it enough. It's a luxury. If you decide to be very upset and panicky and threatened, it's reasonable. But that reasonable behavior, which everyone will put a hand on our back and say, of course, we understand that, is stress. And you've perhaps heard enough to understand that stress will affect, be reflected in various organs and systems, which you need right now. You need right now for that healing process. Fact doesn't know what I'm going to say. The only hint they dropped to me was, be aware that the people out there are primarily either cancer patients or people who are intimately concerned about the welfare of a very close individual. So I've tried to remind myself and put myself back into where I was 9 years ago when I was very concerned about finding information. There's one difference. When I got the diagnosis, I was already blessed very heavily, very expensively, but I already had gotten my information. I already knew what to do. So when the doctors told me, there was no issue of panic. I never suffered. I never went to the doctors for any of the treatment. I have no stories to tell that way. There was no surgery. There was surgery, but there was none of the stories that you've heard. I'd already witnessed the orthodox treatment. I already accepted the experiences life was giving me. Instead of looking away or being helpless, I took it as a gift and tried to understand what I could get good out of it. I'll take the story back quickly at the very beginning, before cancer entered our experience, my family. I read a book about nutrition. It talked about refined foods. I thought it made awfully good sense. I was in my late 20s, and I began to practice it. I eliminated sugar, I eliminated refined flours. I even, without intending to, eliminated red meat. Lo and behold, a number of years later, taking vitamins, I was diagnosed for cancer. What I learned from that, what I'm sitting here wanting to share with you is, not that that information isn't helpful, it's just not directly relevant if you happen to have cancer and you want to do something about it. That is not the answer. I'd still pick up the phone and call fact. But there's a lot of claims out there. And there are a lot of pieces of information that confuse the landscape. In 1976, I was living on the West Coast in Vancouver, and I got a phone call from my brother telling me he had cancer. Like many of you out there, that I did not know anything about cancer, except probably it was terrible. I heard my brother tell me that, and my reaction was I was going to find the cure for it. Don't judge that that was naive, because 17 weeks later, I felt that I had discovered the cure for cancer. It's information that served me later and helped me to survive. But you see, I lost my brother in 12 weeks. The 12 weeks, which sounds shorter than 3 months, I got to observe the system. And what I saw was a system that did not support health. It was biased towards disease. I didn't see a number of doctors who were free to be healers. I saw professionals who had to survive professionally and had rules to follow. And those rules told them very clearly what they may or may not do. And nutrition had nothing to do with what they may or may not do. Now, 9 years ago, nutrition was completely against the system. It was medicine. It was toxic drugs. It was invasive therapies. Now, at the beginning, I didn't understand what this language means to me now. These were well-meaning professionals, well-educated. My experience were they were human beings who were connected to a system, and they could not violate the system because those in charge of the system, those organizations, are incredibly powerful, incredibly strict, and they're not confined to results. They're confined to orthodox practice. I guess the way I could sum up today what I discovered then is, how many more times can the American Cancer Society say, how many more years, with all sincerity, we are just on the verge of finding a cure? Well, it's, I think, at least 20 years, and maybe I should do my homework and know precisely. It's too many years that that claim is sincerely made. The results are not there. I sit up here having followed a certain program. I don't sit up here only because I succeeded at following this program, but because I have seen so many others follow programs. I don't want to give you clues as to my program. I want you to do what I would do. I want you to do what I would tell my relatives to do. Call fact. There is no one answer. There are some general principles, and you've heard them. But you need professionals. You need experienced people who've experienced success and know the pitfalls. This organization represents that for me. I discovered what I needed to know before I knew about fact. I discovered it seeking it out for my brother. My brother was lost because we were vested in the system and didn't understand. Though when I went to the library in his last week of life and I discovered that any young man his age, 39, who has advanced colon cancer, metastasized, in fact has no chance of survival according to their literature. But when I asked the doctor to do some unorthodox procedure, which is allowed today, I happened to be lied to because he felt that was the best way to handle me. And he was afraid that I would use something unorthodox because it would endanger my brother's health. He said that sincerely to me. What's the danger to a patient who's already in your own literature terminal? Shortly after my brother passed away, my father was diagnosed as having cancer. There are lots of details. He was being treated for 7 years. He was not informed. We were not informed. He was cut up. He was radiated. He was chemotherapy. I turned to my father at the very beginning and say, you know, Papa, you've seen all of this. Let's learn. I've found this information. My father has what you all have a right to do, and you have a right to be supported in it. Do whatever you believe in and be supported in that. He chose to, and I was still very much younger and much more enthusiastic, fanatical. I wanted him to follow my way, the proven way. Like once upon a time, I wanted you all out there to follow my way. No. The way that I found and the way that I support and the answers that fact have is not for everyone, because it's not only nutrition. It's a certain mindset, and part of the beginning is a willing to let go of the anxiety. And this goes back to my second hat, my vested interest in the work that I do. So it comes out of that, and be suspicious. But I've discovered, and I've had other professionals tell me and experienced people, you can see in advance those people who feel that they cannot, who are not willing to address the emotional, psychological issues in their lives, to let go of it. It doesn't matter what the story is. Bottom line is if you can find a way to let go of it so it's outside of your daily life and feeling, and address yourself and hear this message, this cry from your being, not just from your body, that what you've been doing is not appropriate. You have this symptom as a message to alter something so that you can pay attention and restore yourself to good health, because we're designed. My experience is that we're designed for good health. I guess that really brings me to my reason for speaking. Bottom line.